Welcome to Business Second Opinion with Carol Sanford, a respected thought leader in the world of business design for growing people in order to grow your business. She always offers a contrarian view on what sacred temples of wisdom, such as the Harvard Business Review, advise. Her approach is based on living systems research and her four decades of practice with Fortune 500 companies and rockstar entrepreneurs. I'm Zach Swartout, and I'm your host. Business Second Opinion is edited, mixed, and mastered by ResonateRecordings.com. If you have a podcast or want to start a podcast, you can go to ResonateRecordings.com and get your first episode produced for free. So, Carol, what are you thinking about today? What do you want to share with us? You know, we're regularly coming back to the just over about 100 toxic practices to humans and societal capacity that you identified in your new book, The Regenerative Business, which, by the way, was just awarded a Nautilus Gold Award for Best Business and Leadership Book of the Year.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. So what's bugging me today, we might say, is the concept of certification. I've been speaking on a lot of platforms recently, and folks come up to me afterwards and they ask me things like, you know, do you have a program you can get certified in doing? And I said, no, not at all interested in certification. Well, which one can I go get? And part of this is these are people, some who are just out of college. And I do notice that certifications are pretty pervasive now. They're even insidiously embedded, I would say, even with people who have really good intentions. But I don't believe certifications are neutral if you really explore it a bit. But they're very popular, even in the best organizations that I respect. But I don't respect the certification part of it.
So the biggest connection I think most people have with certification is their professional certifications, you know, say as an engineer or an accountant or an HR professional. So why is this a worthy subject for Business Second Opinion? It seems like a commonly accepted and useful practice to have a common standard set by people who care.
Well, I know it sounds really good, but I think part of that's its familiarity. It's so much around us. But let's just take an example that's a little different than you're using, the professional example, but one that affects all of us. Think about birth certificates. So everyone now, at least in this country and in most places in the Western world and in cultures that are developed, people have a birth certificate. But you know, it wasn't that long ago that if you were a child of a mixed race, you couldn't get a birth certificate because you were not certified to exist. They were set aside as though they didn't matter. And for that matter, a child who was called a bastard who had unmarried parents could not get a birth certificate. And so it was really hard to find and track them. That's why people would act like that they had the right kind of parents in order to get one. And for many places, especially in the Middle East, for a while, women could not qualify for one unless, of course, their fathers gave them their permission because their fathers owned them and eventually their husbands owned them. So in some ways, a certificate was to prove ownership. And eventually, we used it, of course, to prevent same-sex marriage. These were not certified. And if you were circumcised also in parts of the world, you were able to be classified through your birth certificate, which, of course, in many places ended up having a huge impact later. So certifications can be incredibly discriminatory. They're third party determined. You know, we can't certify ourselves. Only someone else can when you think about a certification.
Wow, that's a crazy history. So what is certification then? Like, what's its purpose and how did it become this topic of interest? Like me, for example, I have several certifications, but always felt like there was kind of someone else's rules. Like in finance, I got certified, but I never used any of the stuff in that certification book. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the process behind this.
Sure. If you look up on most websites of folks that certify something, they say things like, well, it's a formal process by a community of knowledgeable, experienced, and skilled representatives who help determine and provide formal recognition for persons who have achieved some kind of competency, proficiency, or an attainment. And of course, that's usually bounded by a specific area. Sometimes it's by the education, experience, and knowledge you have.
That all sounds pretty useful. What's the problem?
Well, the problem is, let's get some examples out here. So teachers are one of the earliest in modern times that were certified. We don't have a long history past the 20th and 21st century, but there's a little bit earlier, I'll give you. But training for teachers began, it looks like, in about the 1820s. And most of that was because up until then, men were the only ones who could teach. It was a profession for men, which is hard to imagine nowadays. And they set up schools where they could certify women teachers to teach girls. In fact, women weren't even allowed to enter the classroom where boys were. And they call these something I think is hysterical. They called them normal schools. And if you read about it, they were trying to normalize what these teachers would be allowed to do to teach girls so that they could normalize what the behavior was of girls. There were a number of these kind of normal schools that were in the 1800s. Sounds funny still to say it. And then there were some that were off in the countryside, teachers' institutes. But in every case, the intention was to normalize behavior, normalize curriculum, normalize teaching processes so that the women could not move outside the boundary of what the founders wanted. So in that period of history, we can see how it was really designed initially to control women teachers and the teaching of women students. There's another one that I find really, really interesting that precedes this 19th century example, and that's in the Catholic Church. So the very first place that I've been able to find of people who are certifying something is through the Catholic Church, and that is the certificates that they gave to folks to certify that they had paid their alms, and therefore they were being pardoned for their sins, and they were going to get access to heaven. And they literally got the first time we've seen something, they had a printed certificate. And you could wait until, and by the way, they did these in bulk, and the Pope signed them in advance, God's representative on earth, and would forgive you your sins. You eventually could even do it for a dead relative. You could go in and you could pay some set of money in the Catholic Church as a Christian act and would say you'd committed a Christian act and then elevate you in the status of God. But all of this required some payment before the certificate was given. The other time in the Catholic Church this happened, and I think this spread into other later processes, but the Catholics are the one I can find documentation on, that you were required to go on pilgrimages, you know, and receive holy water. And they sold badges, they sold this holy water, and they sold certificates to prove that you'd completed the journey of your pilgrimage. All of this was documented by a third party who was giving the world your recognition. You could say, I did all of this. I've asked God for forgiveness. But no one believed at that period of time unless you got this certificate that God knew. So it was quite wealth producing for the Catholic Church for them to be able to decide. In fact, the term certificate seems to have emerged out of that process, and it was things certified, things that were proved to be certain. They were testified to as the truth, but mostly by the church, which meant, again, they could control what it was that was true and being said out in the world. Now, I find both of these sources, the older ones, but also transferring into the modern times, that people are trying to move behavior into something that's loose and artsy into something that's scientific and predictable. I have talked to people about in businesses, one of the things that I do is try and move an organization from an orchestra where you have a conductor to a jazz ensemble. The jazz ensemble, by its definition, has self-expression where people can contribute based on some underlying rhythm that one person or two maybe initiates. And then on the next round or the next chorus or the next concert, somebody else initiates. So certifications were trying to get rid of that improvisational jazz process and get it into more like an orchestra with a conductor.
I knew nothing about the roots of this, so this is fascinating. But hold on a second. Surely science has studied this stuff, right? Can't they tell us the best way, the best practice, and then help to engage others in that path?
Excuse me for laughing. The assumption that science is neutral always makes me laugh. And, you know, that's going to be another conversation, probably another blog and book and podcast for a different day. But certifications as being developed by third parties are not neutral. The people who develop them, the people who develop the certification, the people who write up what the checklist is you have to meet, they have a mindset. They have a paradigm that they're looking at the world through, and they don't see it. It is completely invisible to them. So if you are certified by those who have risen to power in leadership, and they normally have come from a different culture, a different set of discernment, a different paradigm, and they ignore all the people who don't agree with them. And they're trying to pull the world toward them. So in order to really engage, you have to become ready to rigorously examine how it is that you're thinking. And So one of the examples is that, again, the people who develop the certification have an unarticulated paradigm, and that's usually what we, in modern times, we'd call the behavioral paradigm. They believe that if you say something long enough, loud enough, and then put some, quote, research behind it, that you can get people to do something. So the behavioral paradigm is like the study of rats. And most of the science that we have that's related to the study of human beings, maybe less so in result to medicine, I've not studied that, but in relation to how human beings work, most of it is from a paradigm that most of us would reject now. We would not like the idea that everything that is done for us, about us, and to us is based on the study of rats in a maze.
But Carol, why is it always a third party that's doing this?
I thought about writing a book this probably 20 years ago called Third Party America, because you think about how pretty much everything we have to do to work things out with each other, we need a third party. We need an insurance company. We need attorneys. We need courts. It's like, we can't talk to each other. Marriage counselors, everywhere we go, we have to have third parties. I believe this is a capability problem, that it is the inability of us to manage our state, to be in difficult conversations, to be able to study deep enough and long enough on complex ideas and develop our capacity to do it. But there's one other thing besides this lack of capability, and that's that it's a power thing. It is really whoever can control the certification is the final arbitrator of where the money goes and has control over others. Now, you can go all the way back to kings and to feudal lords and owners and to the church, which we've just talked about. They're attempting to control your beliefs and have you never think for yourself, which was dangerous in olden times if you ever spoke out and had an idea than different than others. So you needed the third party, which would interpret the word from on high and keep people afraid. So this idea of certification literally comes from certifying what is true and just and right. There was about 100 years ago, I think it was now, there were some research done by John Watson. And John Watson was a psychologist, the field he created is called cognitive psychology. And he was the one I was referencing where he was studying rats. And he also used the scientific method, which had arisen at the end of the 19th and early 20th century, which was that you had to have fixed variables, one that moved and one that didn't. And his, you know, was the study of rats and what you did to cause them pain or give them pleasure and get them to the other end of the maze. This study that he did, part of what he came out with, besides the whole incentives program and moving other people based on incentives or a shock, was the idea that, you can see how he got there, is that humans can't see themselves. They can't control themselves. Of course, he's looking at rats because he's saying people can't see their own mind. You can't ask them what they think. Somebody else has to look. So the third party is strongly brought forward by John Watson and the study of rats. And he led almost every science. It's still true. Everywhere I go, people still believe you need some of the third party. And of course, this is contrary to what I believe, which is that we have a different epistemology where we can learn and build the capability to be self-examining. We always have been able to, but with the kings and the feudal lords and then the church and then John Watson, we don't have that. And in fact, the weirdest thing to me is we now have this brain science who's trying to study how humans work, and they're using, you know, an fMRI, putting people's heads in, asking them to think, doing little tricks with them. But they still are using either a third party, the scientist, or a mechanism. It's come because it was really trying to control and know who had the loudest voice and who spoke the word from on high.
Aside from getting shocked with a shock prod, of course, what's the problem with this? Like, some would say it's a method for teaching people about what's right and good and how to work and live today, right? To overcome their kind of negative beliefs or the negative footprint that they leave behind. So can you spell this out a bit more for us?
All right. So here's what the problem with it really is. I guess if you think that somebody else knows better and you should be maneuvered toward what is the right thing to do, which is a lot what we try and do with children and our employees and students, then all of that's fine. But if you believe that human beings have a uniqueness, a capability to do things that are not being developed, you know, so of course, my new book is speaking to this ability to develop and exercise the things that we need as humans to be able to do for the culture. In fact, I don't think we can actually see the things that are happening for planet and society and a role we could play in it without these capacities being developed. I've been working in the Netherlands quite a bit, and so I've been reading about it. And I'd heard about this guy named Erasmus of Rotterdam, but I never knew exactly what he was about until recently. And it turns out I would have loved him if we'd been alive at the same time, because he believed that what was happening with the church at that point was it was undermining thinking and reasoning. That from pre-medieval times, that the church had governed and robbed people of their ability to reason by this process of these third parties, somebody telling you, you pay them, they certify you're sin free, that this literally you got a certificate, that you were robbing them of the capacity of discernment, and that you needed that capacity for discernment in order to be able to work and contribute as a whole human being in society. So that's the big problem for me of what is happening. And I watch in modern times, we've got B Corps, we've got Living Future, Circular Economy, Biomimicry, that they're all trying to now tell us what is right with a certification, and you can go through their programs and be certified. And by the way, I respect all of those folks. It's only their certification process that I go crazy about. And I don't think they're after trying to get the same kind of control over people, but it does have many of the same side effects that those do. So like in Holland, this guy, and eventually Martin Luther built off of his teaching and said, he was standing up and saying, you know, this certification thing is a game. And that what's happening is that the church is making money off of everyone else. And it's really preventing their ability to be in touch with their own power, their own hope, and instead the church has all the power and the wealth and eventually the fame, even beyond the grave of any particular leader. So the church was forbidding the exercise of human reason. That was Erasmus's claim, that thinking for yourself was deemed heretical. That's where the term heresy came up. Thinking for yourself was a heretical idea. And so to claim the power of discernment for oneself was a cause for eternal damnation. You needed a certificate to prove that you were thinking the right thoughts. So to be certified, not be a heretic, you had to accept the teaching of the elders of the church. And of course, I already mentioned John Watson jumped on top of that and said, well, that's a good idea because you can't do that. You don't have the capacity. So you told a personal story. I'll tell a personal story that I haven't told a lot of people about. But I wrote a dissertation a long time ago on discernment. And what I was doing was I was studying researchers and how it was the bias of researchers and the paradigm of researcher was affecting their ability to pick the premise that and the hypothesis they built off of, the method they developed, the way they executed, and then how they interpreted it and published it. And I asked all of them to create a journal, and I introduced to them the idea of paradigms that, you know, I had been working with Thomas Kuhn at UC Berkeley around that, totally fascinated. And it was amazing to see how quickly they could learn to see a different hypothesis. They could frame it and said, if I was in this paradigm, this is probably how I'd ask that same question, how I'd lead toward it. Here's how the methods would look. Here's my interpretation would look. So I had about 120 students who were all doctoral students and had them really watching this. So it was pretty exciting. And I'd gotten all my coursework done, presented all of this to the faculty and the chair of my dissertation ready for defending it. And unfortunately, my chair died just very shortly before I was supposed to present. And he was replaced by a wonderful woman who within a month had breast cancer. And it's like, I felt like something weird was happening to me, and her husband died and she had to leave. Then a new president and a new dean came in who were very interested in getting a certification for the school and proving that they were operating within the scientific paradigm of how they did research. That was exactly 1 month before my defense. So I got back from this new person who knew nothing about me, nothing. I'm not even sure I even read the dissertation or even the coursework that I did. But the shorthand version is that he told me my research did not qualify, that there was no way to guard against subjectivity when you did as much theoretical work as I did. So it was a different paradigm he was holding, a very old, well, I can't say old, but a current paradigm about how research was supposed to happen. And so you couldn't see what I was seeing would have actually helped researchers. So it's always been fascinating to me. And I finally became fine with it. You know, who cares? I don't need a PhD.
So coming into modern time, though, we don't have such evil intentions, right? Like for sure, this new dean that was coming in didn't have evil intentions. He just wasn't aware of the paradigm he was thinking through. But so are there downsides, toxins, and kind of toxic thinking in modern certification like B-Lab, Living Future, Biomimicry, and the Circular Economy?
You know, I agree with you. These are all extraordinary people. They all are trying to do really great things, mostly for the planet. That's the kind of paradigm they're in. I think they would be helped if they could understand that the way we work on society is critical to whether or not we can do something for Earth. So I agree with their lack of bad intentions, but the centuries-old pattern of not being able to see the paradigm and the epistemology that we're working from to bring humans into this full expression and give us the ability to play the role I think we have in discerning what it means to have a forest and a life shed really work is still really missing. And part of this comes from the kinds of these third-party processes, and particularly certification, but it includes feedback and a series of others. There are still some inherent limiters. I do call them toxic in my new book, because I think they have a tendency to diminish and eventually potentially kill our capacity to see things. So I found eight of them. We'll see if we can get through all of these, but they work against the brain working in its ability to see and image things at work. And I think they're inherent in all third-party processes, and I think it's not enough to have good intentions.
So hit us with the first three. What do you got?
Okay. Well, remember, certifications are offered as truth, the way toward the light, and there's no engagement as a result with people who come to be certified. So you come in, you don't test its validity, the organization is doing the thinking for you. So this increasingly decreases the capacity of people to do this thinking for themselves. There's no challenge. There's no premises put out you can discuss. Everything stands and comes out of the premises that you're given, which are embedded in the certification. For me, I think if you aren't building critical thinking skills with people, then what you're doing is working out of the epistemology where it's about, I've got the knowledge and I give it to you. And I do think that's a pretty outdated idea. Even when some changes are made to these certifications, they tend to be pretty incremental. And I respect the people who are doing this, but most of them end up with a paradigm either of extract value, you know, how do we get the things we can do to people? What's the right answer? Or how do we do less harm? And with these kind of old paradigms, I think that we've struggled to not have those be what we worked with and have moved into a new paradigm that some people are now calling the do-good paradigm. I don't want to do just less harm. I want to do good. And I believe it has a halo of righteousness, but its underbelly is elitism, that there are certain people who can know and they can tell others. So the do-good paradigm is the paradigm I think is being used for certifications now, and I think that has some problems.
I guess what I'm hearing in there is the certification is really about shortcutting, and what gets shortcut is people's ability to think for themselves, to be rigorous in their own kind of thinking. Is that kind of what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, and to not be able to see the paradigm the developer or the person who is accepting the certification has. And of course, that was what Erasmus was saying. Certifications and you having to certify me undermine my human ability to reason. The second one is that it requires experts being there who have final answers. And there are people who are placed above other people with the assumption some can think better than others. And I think probably the people who think they can think better than others are the ones who can't think very well at all because they don't engage in discernment and they don't build a capacity for discernment or for doing that with others. So third parties have the knowledge and the expertise. You're assumed to be the only one who knows. For me, what I really want and the biggest limiter that I've hinted at in the last one and this one is the capability building is what we desperately need right now of every individual, the capacity for discernment. And on the other end of that scale is certification, where you don't need any discernment, you don't need any capability, and you can be certified by someone else. So you just need to complete their course of study, have their knowledge, and then you'll be wise. I want us to move away from knowledge acquisition and this non-heretical certification process where the epistemology is I develop and I ascertain what it really means and move toward the Socratic process where we examine all ideas and accept none until we've experienced them with reflected reasoning and are deeply engaged in it. So understanding comes from this exploration where only knowledge can come from something that's distributed to you. So that's the second limiter, I think.
Yeah, and I think what I'm hearing in there is that this has applications, these kind of critical thinking skills and critical thinking processes that you're offering here have ways of helping us not only in the business world, but just in everyday life. And I think you brought up the idea quite often of how this can help democracy. So I can definitely see this applying all over different aspects of my life. I want to remind everyone about how to participate in the show by joining in our quiz on SurveyMonkey each week. This is where you can offer articles for review from HBR or other popular business-written media. Find the link at businesssecondopinion.com. It's more fun to listen when you participate. Also, to get educated about Carol's approach to critiquing popular ideas, download her chapter at businesssecondopinion.com. Okay, Carol, so what's the third one?
Just occurred to me, there's one thing I probably ought to say because people are going, well, what do you mean? You don't want to say doctors are certified to do stuff? I mean, that's really a licensing process, which is a little different. And I am not saying that I don't want us testing people who are going to be flying airplanes that we're riding on or doctors who might be doing surgery on us or our children. I'm talking about where we, and that's very skill-based, and I haven't thought a lot about it, but I'm not saying we should stop licensing physicians. What I am talking about is that the exclusionary nature that we get when people don't fit our paradigm is the third one. So you don't fit, you don't look. So we go back to the birth certificates, the marriage certificates, and the professional certificates. All of those can easily exclude people. Maybe you remember when women weren't allowed to be firemen and the certification was you had to be lift a certain amount of weight in a certain way. And then they realized that never happened or it happened so rarely and that it didn't matter. So this use of certifications to keep people from joining that are more like how we think already and get them to accept our knowledge and our practice, and we exclude them if they don't. And we navigate that through these processes. In fact, if you think about it, we're actually thinking they're heretics. I have heard people say people are stupid or they're ignorant and they get shunned because they don't fit and don't see it the way we do. I was speaking at a conference this last week and I had must have been 10 people who I'd asked to think through these paradigms, which, by the way, we have a paper on this site that you can download for free on the Business Second Opinion website. And people were coming up and saying, I've been looking at these four paradigms and I was trying to understand why people don't exactly understand and see the world the way I do. It's just like, I can't even figure out how they don't get it. And when I played with it and I thought, all right, if you're in this paradigm, this extract value paradigm, then you're going to see the world very differently than I do. Even if it's less harmed, you know, don't harm things, you're going to see it differently. And even if you're in the do good, and certainly for me, I'm always worried people say, well, let's do good. Let's do some good things. I know that there's a lot of risk in that. So the reason that we tend to exclude people is because we want to belong, and we have this tendency to only work with and hang out with people unless we really work on it that's based on us having a shared paradigm.
Yeah, so Carol, that makes sense to me. As I'm thinking about this, it feels as though this idea of paradigm blindness is very real for people and that they can't necessarily see until that gets introduced, until you start talking about the idea and people actually then start actually working with it at the same time. That's how they are able to build that critical thinking capacity that you're talking about. So what about number four?
All right. So number four is related to something that's happened just more recently in history, last couple hundred years, ever since the Industrial Revolution, I think, where we had this advent of mass production and then computers and then the internet. And in there, we threw in this modern scientific method where you had to chop things up, look at very small pieces. You couldn't look at a whole, you couldn't look at your own mind. So you have all of that being thrown into the world. And what it did is created a fragmented mind, saying that, you know, if I can't understand something, then what I should be doing is breaking it down into its simplest parts, and then I can understand it. And I had a grandfather who always used to laugh at how in school, even then, they had asked him to study. He said, this is like, if you want to understand how a frog works, you have to observe it in life. But instead, what we do is we dissect it, we label the parts, we lead to extrapolating metaphorically what we think this leg would do or how it would work based on how it's bent. And if we can't get that, then we break it down into even smaller aspects, where this muscle, how it works. We know the names of parts, but we don't understand the working of the frog until we observe it and we image it at work in a habitat within an ecosystem. So you have to, if you really want to understand a frog, you have to image it working. There's another example only in the last month where the Journal of Scientific Studies, I think it was called, came up with this, was this headline that said, new organ discovered, largest in the human body. And of course, we always thought the skin was the largest in the human body before that, but nope, this is not about skin. It was called the interstitial, that's how you say it, And what it was an organ that disappears when it's studied in a cadaver. So if it's a dead being, especially when things are chopped up, there's no flow because this is a process, an organ that only works when it's alive. And it would be literally like having fluid flow through it or oxygen flow through it or something caused you to be able to see it rise, fall, and move. But we couldn't see it until we actually had the kind of machinery, not just x-rays, but the MRIs, to be able to find it and see it alive. So instead of being able to work systemically, we fragment and we create a list of things. A list is one of the greatest examples of fragmenting. And that's what certifications are. They don't come out as a system. They come out as a chunk set of subjects, and then usually a subset under that that you can check off that you've got this part. So one of the, you know, Bead Lab, who, as I said, I really love, gets into this and tends to make certifications that are fragmenting. Harvard Business Review, which, as you know, I love to hate, had an article a couple of years ago. I think it was June 17th, 1916. Title of it was Why Companies Are Becoming B Corps. And actually, the article is very hope-filling. So it's not like I was upset about this article at all, but it was giving a reason for that the higher order intentions were coming out of people being on the wanting to be on the right spectrum of having their effects and the potential they have in the world come out right. And it's also said that their intention is to be identifying with something, the B Corp, that publicly has a claim of being interested in more than the shareholder and the stakeholder. And they can say that if they've got the certification. So they're looking for this clear identity to help firms communicate the value to their customers, which, by the way, turns out to have a really beneficial effect if people can see you're different from the rest of the industry. So I understand how they get to the idea of supporting their members and being able to get this financial reward, but also this moral and ethical reward. So I'm on the side of businesses and what they're up to, and I greatly admire particularly, and I feel like I can pick on B-Lab a little bit, but I do have a quibble with their certification process because of the toxic effects I've already been talking about. It's a dilemma in many ways to figure out how to get this certification and yet not be the one who is narrowing what they think about. So this fragmentation is this fourth limiter that I feel like I have some concern about. They pull out. So they start with certifying just three stakeholders. This is an example of fragmentation again. What they're looking at are employees and earth and community who are not normally picked up by the other things that are measured by a corporation. So if you start with their employees, what they do is they pick something. And they pick that what they want to do is look at their well-being. And so they ask questions about compensation, benefit fairness, payroll equity, offerings of health and safety, and ability to be flexible and well-trained. Of course, all of those are nice things. They come from the do-good paradigm. But what they leave out, and this is what's important, fragmentation tends to leave out things that a living system paradigm would have you see. What they leave out is the development of individual essence and the human intelligence that comes from having critical thinking skills and being able to be self-managing. That's not spoken of, and there's no way you can certify that, but it is something that's core if you want to move to a living systems regenerative paradigm. It's also not about flexibility, which they mention, and autonomy, which comes out of the do good, but it's about having self-directed personal agency to come up with ideas and be able to contribute. So the regenerative business is really working on the idea of developing the full human capacity, which can't be put into the certification, which do people have increasingly internal locus of control? Only an individual can answer that for themselves because it happens inside of us. Do they have external considering where they're thinking about customers, where they're thinking about others, not just their coworkers? Do they have personal agency? And have we structured things so that they can exercise that agency? So having the questions which they ask about benefits and pay come out of a do-good paradigm, and again, that's fine. I mean, I'm not arguing about it, but we don't see the paradigm we're using, and therefore we don't see what we're missing. One other example, Bill Reed, who's one of my colleagues, is one of the founders of LEED, the LEED certification program for green buildings. And Bill nearly went crazy for watching this certification program for that the Green Building Council put together because it was so segmented and fragmented that you no longer could educate people about what it meant to really build in a green way. So he created another process which had no certification attached to it, which was integrated design. And it includes education, reflection, the unique creation of each individual building or project in its ecosystem, in the community it exists in, and certifications had no way of being able to touch this kind of work and thinking. So if you can check something off a list, you're likely fragmenting. If you can count it, you're likely fragmenting and not staying complete in it. So the B-Lab certification, although I think it has good intentions in trying to go beyond shareholding and other stakeholders, it still has this fragmenting process. Now, I wrote another book before this one, The Regenerative Business, which was trying to show people how to work with the system of all five stakeholders, because if we build a certification around three of them, we miss tons of opportunities. So if you're building something around employees and you don't connect them to what can they do with their customers and with the market, you're really not building the external considering. So I guess the major thing I'd say on this number four fragmenting is it mostly is really incomplete and it leaves you unable to see the systemic nature of it.
That's different than the current book, right? The Regenerative Business.
Oh, right. So the Responsible Business is one I wrote about 7 years ago. That's more about the whole ecosystem of how you run a business and build stakeholders and have it work as a system. The current one is much more about work design and how it is that you bring all those aspects together to have people connected to those larger questions in a systemic way rather than a fragmented way.
Okay, got it. So what's number five?
So the fifth toxic input that I see is that in order to do a certification, you tend to develop some kind of ideals to shoot for. So if you're going to certify, you want people going towards something so that ultimately you can say, okay, you're there and we can certify you. Besides the fact that that in itself is fragmented, it'll leave out a lot of things. There is a guy named John Mohawk, who I'm probably connected to somewhere since I have Mohawk heritage. He's a tribal member of the Seneca Nation, but he's also an associate professor of history. And he looks a lot at the Native American tradition and the skeletons in the closet of the Western political and religious, what he calls utopias, that are all built on ideas. And he points out how damaging these ideals have been for hundreds of years to Native peoples. And they were imposed on them using another culture's idea about what doing good was. So all children need to speak English. They need to not be holding the old ideas. So we take them away from their parents and we put them in a boarding school where you have white Americans out of another culture teach them. That's the effect of having ideals that come from a different world view, a different cultural view. He writes about this eloquently. He wrote a book called Utopian Legacies, which I would recommend anyone who is interested reads. The people who are building these ideals and the certifications are almost without exception ignoring the current stories and lives of many of the people that they're trying to bring forward. I was with a lot of indigenous folks out of Central America and actually across the U.S., and proposed this idea last week, and they all said, oh yeah, people's ideals are very, very discriminatory. So these new certifications tend to substitute some of their own new ideals for what they thought were the bad ideals. Like the new ideal is that we use less of Earth in everything we do, whereas the old ideal was it was ours and we get to do anything we want. But any ideal we impose, if you went into a Native culture or some other culture, they would say, that's not our ideal. Maybe it would be more like seeing ourselves embedded in how life works, and we're able to play a role in it. That's a very different ideal. And of course, you can't put that in a certification. So there's no dialogue, but these ideals tend to be imposed from another worldview and another paradigm.
Okay, got it. So let me just track where we're at so far. So far, we've done kind of the first five of these. Let me just run through them real quick just to make sure they've landed for me and our audience as well. So the first one is unchallengeable in order to belong. The second one is require experts who hold the knowledge and judge others. The third one is they're exclusionary of those who don't hold the same beliefs and are essentially used to ostracize and shun. They use a fragmented process and foster kind of parts and pieces without connecting the holes. They foster utopian thinking, dropping out the place and peoples of that initial place. I got it so far?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So what is six through eight then?
All right, let's see if we can do those because they're kind of building a bit off of the ones we've had. So number six is, you know about the idea of teaching to the test. So teachers get a certification that kids are going to have when they graduate. What they do is teach only what's going to be on that test, and they ignore everything else. That is a lot of what happens with certification, too. It becomes partial, piecemeal, and incomplete, and it doesn't help people learn to see holes. So the seventh one is, and I hinted at this when I talked about my dissertation, inside the creation of every certification process are all the biases and the incompleteness in our own thinking, which we do not examine because we just use them. We use them to develop the list of our certification, the categories of our certification. We can't tell what we excluded. We can't tell which minds we left out. We don't even look at the effects that this might have on others with our do-good ideas. The eighth one is because all of certification is about measuring, either checking off something or counting it, it tends to obfuscate the things that are more we would want to care about. It tends to not have us connect with the soul of something, the meaning of something. But we do this because it is so much easier to dumb it down, check it off functionally, but it does have this heart-wrenching process of making it almost dead. It's so much like cutting up this frog. And I guess overall, I would say that certifications don't improve discernment of human beings or consciousness, certainly not of any whole they're a part of, not of how a whole is vital, how it has, you know, can stay viable in the world, and how it can evolve over time. The certifications don't connect us with living systems because they're dead documents like cut up frogs. And they often are drawn up as financial instruments. I can't believe how often I've been told when I ask people why they did this, and these are good people I love. Well, we were trying to figure out how to make more money. You can only get so many members or donations. And this is a really good way to get people and to build, you know, kind of a tribe for yourself. So again, those aren't horrible things, but if they have all these other processes in them, then it's not so great. It does help people get a voice and a platform in the industry, but I ask the question, are the trade-offs worth it for what human capacity loses?
Well, Carol, I don't think I'll see certifications the same way again. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Do you want to suggest articles for Carol to review, maybe pose questions for her to answer, or argue with her response and get a second opinion? Become a member at businesssecondopinion.com. Also, don't forget to subscribe and review on any, on maybe iTunes or any of the podcast platforms you use. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feed. And when you subscribe and review, you'll get put in a drawing to win a copy of her new book, The Regenerative Business, or a poster of our readers' favorite quotes from the book. Also, subscribe to the blog that accompanies the podcast and newsletter that keeps you up to speed on what's coming next. This has been Business Second Opinion.